So a week off, and I still have a cold that doesn't die. It's great. Fantastic. Love it all. Welcome to the Soderstrom Bubble. I am Scotty Waz. That is Jen, the NHL History Girl. How was your week away from this?
Busy.
Yeah. Yeah, we're packing up and moving out of here. So we're in those stages.
And my son's here.
And yeah, your son's here.
So I got to spend time with him.
So family time on top of moving time.
On top of secret projects.
Yes, on top of super secret projects. It'll be unveiled in time.
Yes.
So it is a cavalcade of goodness here in the Face-Off Hockey Show Media Faction Dakota Division. The name's just getting longer and longer. It's terrible. And soon we'll have a new home on the Blog Talk Radios. Like this week, this show, and then the show 2 weeks from now. Because as we announced on Twitter, we're doing every other week in the summer. Because why use all the goodness in the summer when
right.
everyone else vacationing?
Yeah.
Listen to our past shows, jerks. but yeah, the next week we'll have, or next show will be August 5th, I think? 6th? August 6th, because that's a Sunday.
Yeah.
And that'll be our last show on the Podbean situation. And then we'll go right into the Blog Talk Radio 2 weeks after. So fun times. Click on those ads, folks. Get us some money. Mm-hmm. So we can buy cereal that doesn't have bolts in it.
That was weird this morning.
It's an odd thing. You don't expect that.
No.
Someone, I saw the replies to your thing about that. And I'm like, and yeah, Metal Crustio right
yeah,
off the hop.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like, shout out to you for that.
Yeah, good call. Yeah. Good memory. But we're going to get to the nuts and bolts of hockey equipment this year, or this week.
Yeah.
And a lot of evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say in our lifetime.
Yeah.
I would say more evolution from the 80s until now than there were in the previous century? Almost?
Yeah.
I would think, because everything else from like the whole golden age of hockey back in the 50s, 60s and such, not much evolution,
mm-mm.
if anything. So, what can you tell us about, I guess, the early day of equipment? Like, what was, because it was stick and ball.
Yeah.
And then when do people start just going, you know what, maybe we should protect ourselves because this is not cow poop anymore.
Players didn't really have much protection. What protection they did use was like cricket type protection. Like you'll see goalies back in the day with very form-fitting pads with the rolls that are vertical. And those are cricket pads. And those are just, I think, horsehide and I think it's it's called Kapok. K-pack, something like that, stuffing.
That was, I'm sorry, I have to interrupt you here.
I have no idea what that word is. I don't remember. I just remember it was like tree fluff. That
was a Kevin Spacey movie, K-packs. It's odd how they went into the future and got copies of K-packs to protect their kids
right.
with.
And so they're just packed with like deer hair, this K-pack stuff, which is some sort of like tree, like cottony.
That seems
stuff
like something
from a tree
yeah.
that they would use to
some kind of the first, I guess, quote unquote, synthetic.
Yeah,
almost.
Yeah. If they did wear any sort of like elbow, shoulder, chest, they didn't have to worry much about that sort of thing, though, because there wasn't a lot of contact with the goalies. For one thing, it was a much slower game. For two, they didn't hit the puck that hard, so they didn't really need the toe protection. So if you see the old goalie skates with toe protectors, it's mostly just like extra layers of leather sewn onto the toe. Although you did say one company, Star
Manufacturing. We were looking up because before the show, we were just like, we still hadn't figured out like the lineage of the goaltender skate because
there's not a lot about it.
No, yeah. There's not much. And, pictures show George Vezina as being one of the first ones to mm-hmm. use it in prominence, but digging a little deeper, Star Manufacturing, Star Hockey in the 1890s developed a steel mound on the upper part of the skate blade specifically for goaltenders called the puck stop. And they used it was helped to prevent pucks from scoring past the goaltenders through the skate blade. Because obviously the skate blade a little higher on some things, so the goaltender skate blade went there. And Star was just a single blade manufacturer, so you boot it to bolt it to the bottom of your boot, so you can replace it as easy. But that's really the first one where it's specifically goaltender skate blade, which I thought was quite interesting. For all intents and purposes.
Yeah. Well, skates, the early skates, if you look at them, they're actually pretty high off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what the purpose of that was, but most skate blades were pretty, like, what the standard now is, what, an inch, inch and a half?
Mm-hmm.
Back then, it was more like two, two and a half.
Let's look at your skates here. So.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of room.
Yeah.
And a lot of
And I wonder if it has to do with stability and flexibility, because you're not doing, for this one, like, it's specific for visual stuff on the podcast, is great. but I'm holding Jen's Bauer Supremes here, and like this is specific. You're not unbolting, unlike there's companies where you can bolt skate blades onto and just use it as a boot,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing, but this is specific for skating.
Yeah.
These other things could have been just, hey, if you have your boots on, mm-hmm. and you go out to the rink, you can strap these
on.
Right,
and they were considered multi-purpose skates,
right.
So you could use them for figure skating, or, you know, there were longer ones that you could use for, like, speed skating. And
it was almost like a Swiss Army knife, those things, because you could bolt one in, and then you can bolt the others in.
Yep. And so, yeah, starting off, mostly it was you had your long underwear, your knitted socks, your shorts, which were usually wool, I believe, and your sweater, which was also wool, and, you know, whatever undershirt you decided to wear with it. That was it. That was your gear. And then leather gloves, like lightly padded leather gloves. They weren't heavy the way they are today.
It was more for warmth than anything else.
Right, and protection. If you fell on the ice, somebody didn't accidentally skate over your hand,
right.
You know, that sort of thing. Moving forward a little, you have...
Well, if I can stop you real quick. Cause I'm looking. The NHL put out... When the NHL did their thing with the Edge jerseys, they put out a timeline for equipment. First goaltender to wear leg pads. Do you know this?
First goalie to wear leg pads?
Mm-hmm. It's in 1896. George Merritt of the Winnipeg Victorias. And this was the cricket pads. So it was the first goalie to wear such cricket pads. So in 1896, posted a 2-0 shutout over Montreal Victorias. Everyone's called Victorias.
Yeah, it was
all
a very popular name back then.
It was the Rough Riders of Canadian hockey.
Basically, they were all either like the Victorias or the Shamrocks, or what was the other one?
Surprise Shamrocks over Maple Leafs. You would have think Leafs are some kind of moose.
Not until later.
Mm.
Yeah, not until later. Maple Leafs start showing up in the post-World War One, or around World War One.
Mm-hmm.
That's when Leafs becomes a popular team name.
Battle cry almost.
Yeah.
All right, sorry, going forward?
So going forward, as the game gets a little more intense, still not nearly as fast as it is today, goalies have... a catcher, which is a heavy leather glove, almost like a baseball catcher's mitt, like that sort of thick leather with the padding and all of that. And then it's not for a little while yet that they have a blocker. But when they do have a blocker, it's usually a wooden frame filled with like sponge rubber and covered with leather, and then it attaches on the top of like a regular glove.
Right. It's almost like an additional.
Yeah, it's like it's a piece you just wear on top of your regular glove. You see them wearing like these cotton undershirts. If you've ever taken a look at baseball catchers from that early, like, I don't know, early 1900s era. It's that cotton shirt with the felt padding with the leather sewn on top. And some players had leather like leather padded cups on their elbows and shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And those also were lined with felt. Other goalies just wore like shirts with felt, like just
right.
felt sewn onto them.
Well, Chicago Tribune did a good thing a few years back about the history of, and a very visual thing on that. So if you look for like the evolution of goalie history, there's stuff, there's a lot of visual crap there. And for the player wise, not really much has changed except for Cyclone Taylor being a early adopter to shoulder and back protection.
Yeah.
So he took scraps of felt from harness shop in his hometown of Renfrew, Ontario, sewed them into his undershirt around the shoulders and down the back.
Yeah. Well, Cyclone Taylor was a pretty big name in early hockey, very much a star, which made him a target.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why he was like, hey, I can't keep doing this.
Right.
You know, yeah.
Also during that time, elbow pads started to come into vogue in the 1910s, made of felt.
Yep.
Kneecap protectors, large square of leather or canvas reinforced with felt.
Mm-hmm.
Gloves were made of leather that had padding of animal hair and felt. Some gloves added sticks of bamboo or rattan. What is rattan?
Rattan.
Huh?
Yes.
Oh. What is rattan?
It's a like a bamboo like.
It's like a hard cane thing.
Yeah, basically.
Position over the wrist portion to provide extra protection. So there you go.
Yeah, you're not gonna see like the rolls or anything like that until much later.
Much later, yeah.
So, around 1926-ish. You're going to see the first true goalie pads. And the reason for this is, I want to say it was the Hamilton Tigers. It was Jake Forbes. The goalie, in the end, the goalie he did this for was Jake Forbes.
Yeah. That would be Hamilton Tigers, yes.
Yeah. And he and the team manager went to a harness, saddle harness maker. Yeah. I said that in the right order. I had to think about it for a second. Like, no, those words don't normally... Yeah. I don't usually say those words, so I want to make sure I say them in the right order.
A harness saddle maker.
Yes. And so this was a guy named Pop Kaminsky. And he normally just worked with harness racing. You know, making the harnesses and the accoutrement that go with it. The leather work, basically. And they asked him to make a better set of goalie pads, something that could protect them a little bit more. And he did. And they were made of California cream horse leather. They were filled with deer hair and that kapok stuff. And they were modeled on cricket pads, but they were wider. And they extended a little further down over the foot. And then after that, you see the various different modifications that the different goalies of that era started asking for, like a little bit higher knee protection, a little flaring at the top, a little, you know, a little more here, a little less there. And his pads became immensely popular. And he made 300 pairs a year. And because his pads were so popular, he had a waiting list. And he made a rule that you had to be at such and such level of playing before you could buy a pair of his pads. So you had to play for, like, the NHL, the AHL.
The PCHL.
The PCHL, the WHL, and I can't remember what the other lower level was, but that was it. Those were the pads he made. And because of the time and expense, most teams would only get goalie pads like once a year or once every 2 years. I remember Glenn Hall saying once that he got new pads for the team photo shoot, and that those were his pads, that like that's it, that was his one pair for
however long.
Yeah.
And back then it was more about, I guess, longevity in the pads too, because mm-hmm. you know, that stuff is expensive to make, so and you don't make that big of a living wage as it was. So you see guys using pads 5-6 years at a time.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like today where you see different sets of pads when there's a different design by Reebok or Bauer.
Yeah, and like goalies today have what, 3-4 pairs a year?
At least.
At least.
And they have the gloves are probably more than that, because those yeah. they use those a bleep ton more than they do use the leg pads in terms of just wear and tear.
Yeah. And the problem with these pads were making them light enough, because their average weight was, I think, something like 18 pounds per pad. And then you get on the ice, well, leather soaks up sweat, and so so does the filling. And by the end of the game, you're wearing, you know, like 30-pound pads that are soggy, and you could squish them as wide. Basically, you could, like, hit them with your stick and make them wider during the game than regulation would mm-hmm. would allow. So,
yeah. Kaninsky is apparently still in business in Hamilton, Ontario.
It is. It used to be a family business, but I think they sold in like 2005,
because like the other son, had passed away.
Okay.
So there's that, but it's still going on. Cycle and Kaninsky Cycle and Sport. And you had an interesting thing, at least in terms of what you remember about the CCM Tackleberry Skate. Now.
Yeah.
Full disclosure here. Uh-huh. I know a lot about this history because for a brief time, Face Off Hockey Show was sponsored by CCM.
Ah.
So we got free sweats and we had to do live reads on it. So I know a lot about that. So.
Yeah, but the reason why they're called Tax.
It's George Tackleberry.
Yeah.
He was in Police Academy. He was great. It's amazing, isn't it?
Actually. It is for a guy named Tackleberry. You can look him up.
I'm looking it up right now.
Okay. He was a neighbor of, I want to say it was Joe Malone, or was it Joe Hall?
I just have the history of the Tackleberry and how he got involved. Joe Hall.
Joe Hall. There, yeah. Yeah.
Because he came to him with a problem.
Yeah. He's like, these skates don't fit right and they hurt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there has to be a better way. And Mr. Tackleberry happened to make orthotic shoes for children with, like, club foot and, you know, foot surgeries and polio braces and what all, you know. So that was his job, was to make custom-made orthotic shoes. And he said, well, let me take a look and give it a try. And he did. And Joe went, hey, this is fantastic. I'm going to go tell all my friends. And that was the start of the Tax.
The reinforcement of the leather boot was at the toe and the heel, and mm-hmm. that's what really was getting people down, because obviously leather heels probably the first to go, and they stretch, yeah. Reinforce that, bada boom, there you go. And then CCM acquired the Tackleberry brand in 1937. So that from 05 to 37, it was independent. And this is interesting. This kind of coincides with the news recently that mm-hmm. Adidas had sold off CCM.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the first time CCM has gone akimbo. In 83, they went bankrupt. Then they came back, but they came back again, and they just got really crappy again. And now mm-hmm. when they got bought up by Reebok, now Adidas is just selling everything equipment-wise now. So CCM got bought by a German manufacturer for $100 million. It's interesting. It's interesting to make, because you look at what Bauer did when Nike bought Bauer, because Bauer bought Cooper. And then, because Cooper was with Bauer, kind of just making the same damn thing. And then Bauer bought Cooper, and then Nike bought Bauer, and then Nike left hockey and left Bauer out in the cold. And then somebody brought that, and then they had a big scheme, and they're under investigation now. But the point is this: they were there, and they were good.
Yes. Tax were like the premier skate for a long, long time, up until what, the '70s. When you start getting,
when Bauer starts to be a big player, bigger player into it, because again they were there,
and then you get the weird stuff like Micron,
and then Graf starts to come in.
Yeah, wasn't there like a Finnish company too? So I remember we were at a garage sale. And
I would think it was Graf, because Graf is very European.
Yeah,
Because they go by European sizes, and their boots are very interesting. Like I never. The people who I've played with that use Graf skates love them.
Mm-hmm.
They swear by them, but I never could get, like, it felt weird. It's not to say the skates that I have now that I'm trying to break in aren't weird, because it's just completely wider in the ankle area.
Yeah.
But
I just know that any pair of skates I buy are going to be slightly uncomfortable just because I have stupidly high arches.
And I have flat feet, so I got the same problem, but a different way.
Yeah. So we have the tax. Occasionally you'll see a picture of a player wearing a very strange looking like leather helmet-y sort of thing. It's actually a football helmet. The very early prototype football helmet that was basically just sort of like a starburst design. It was like strips emanating from the top to a leather band that went around like your forehead and then the strap underneath. And that was just because a player had, you know, a head injury and it was not acceptable to wear a helmet.
Mm-mm.
Unless you had a really good reason. Like, sure. You know,
January 1st, 1928, George Owen, the first player in the NHL to wear a helmet. He was elected to the College Football Hall of Fame, oddly enough.
He wore a football helmet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then 36, in the 36 Olympics, leather helmets with wire caging were in vogue.
Hmm.
So that was a thing in the 36 Olympics.
Dear Britain won.
Mm-hmm. 36 or 32?
That was 36. Anyway.
I'll look it up. You do that.
So this is the period where you're going to see players really starting to wear actual equipment, but you're not going to see helmets until late 60s. Late
60s is when,
yeah,
like 70% of people, like towards the end of the mid 70s too.
Yeah.
Because the game was getting faster. The game was evolving more.
Right. And they'd seen someone die on the
right.
ice.
Bill yeah, Masterton,
like,
yeah.
Like, you hadn't seen him. He didn't die on the ice, but he died shortly after. And, you know, that was sort of a devastating come to Jesus moment for a lot of players.
Well, even before that, I'm surprised with what happened with Ace Bailey.
Yeah.
In terms of him getting his skull cracked by Eddie Shore.
Yeah.
It was a big thing.
Well, the mentality at the time was, you know, this was an accident and, you know, this almost never happens, therefore it sure. can't happen to me, so.
Is that always what happens, though? I mean.
Generally, yeah.
Let's fill in the gaps a little bit here, if you don't mind.
Nope.
Because
we're just about to hit the 40s when they first really pad gloves.
Sure.
And
well, I'll go ahead and run down the 30s. 1930, players begin wearing numbers on their jerseys.
Yeah. Well, that's when they're required to.
Required to, yes.
Yes.
1931, Babe Siebert broke his thumb and trainer Bill O'Brien put a shoehorn inside of it.
Yeah.
So it was the first start of the reinforced fiber thumb,
yep.
which has been staple in the 30s and even today with the lock thumb where you have the thumb underneath, but there's another leather part that dangles off of it that
yep.
protects your thumb. In the 1930s, also better protect their elbows wearing leather pads outside of their sweaters. So you see a lot of the sweaters there having like a leather, almost like a professor.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, sewn on to
the
sweaters.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It makes them look a bit more dignified. 33, of course, talked about the Ace Bailey incident.
Mm-hmm.
Shore became the first high-profile player to wear a helmet regularly after the collision.
Mm-hmm.
So he knew stuff was going to happen. And in 1959-60, only four players had worn a helmet. Charlie Burns, Vic Stasiuk, Warren Gadfrey, and Camille Harris wore helmets on a regular basis. This is in 36 or 37, 38. Metal was banned in equipment. And you were telling me a couple days ago about the whole metal thing that you had found out.
Yeah. When players started wearing elbow pads and shoulder pads, they were not allowed to wear metal in the shoulder pads and elbow pads. And whether or not if that means like the leather was riveted or if it means that there were actual metal caps, I don't entirely know. But yeah, wearing metal in your protection was not allowed.
Well, then we go into the 40s.
Yeah, well, this is when you see the first goalie wear a mask.
Clint Benedict, yes.
Right. It was a leather mask. It was like a lower half.
It was like a knuckle band-aid.
Kind of, yeah, that's what it looks like.
It had the leather top and then down the nose and then the leather bottom.
Yeah.
And he said a big reason why he stopped using it, because I was reading it on this, was that he couldn't breathe in it.
Yeah.
Because the nose piece was too tight.
Well, the problem was he had a broken nose, too,
mm-hmm.
right? So, yeah, it was a leather mask sort of molded for his nose that didn't fit quite right.
And it looks gaudy as hell. I like the fact that he committed to the team picture wearing that.
Yeah.
Like in historical, and this was not, this is, and you have to figure this was also, that has to post, I don't know if it's predates or postdates the Japanese goalie who had the almost the catcher mask style.
Oh, Hanma?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I want to say that was 40s, early 40s.
No, I think that was the 36 Olympics, 36 too. Yeah. So it's all right about the same time.
So the catcher mask style where he had like a almost like a small padded helmet and then the face mask over top of it with circles around
his
eyes.
Yeah, it was what we call a beehive mask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nowadays.
Yeah.
Have you seen those beehive cage on the modern goalies?
No, it's weird. No.
All right, so we get into the 40s.
Yeah, so anyone who tells you that Jacques Plante was the first NHL goalie to wear a mask is lying.
No, that whole thing on NHL.com is a fraud, you godforsaken. Man, is he gone senile.
You know, I love Stan Fischler. I do. You know, when he was on top of things?
93 and earlier. Top. when the Rangers won, after they won the cup, he's gone crazy.
Yeah, I read the first paragraph of that. I was like, I can't read this because my blood pressure is like...
And I read it in that old coot voice.
Yeah. That Andy Rooney sort of.
You know, back in my day.
Yeah.
Goaltenders didn't dare wear a mask.
The interesting thing about it was he said he was at that game.
Of course he did. Of course he did, because Stan Fischler's 400
years old.
He was
at all the games, so, you know.
He's goddamn Moses, that guy. He's lived for 5,000 years. Leave him alone.
Yeah. Like you said, I love him, but he's lost a step lately.
Well, even like we were talking about this on Faceoff Hockey Show, because I was showing off your book about the Big Bad Bruins, Bobby Orr.
Oh, sure, yeah.
By Fischler. And Lyle's like, yeah, he's become the Don Cherry. He's trying to be the Don Cherry of U.S. hockey, and he's just crazy old coot yelling at clouds. Anyway.
Yeah, so where were we before that?
Well, I have it here on the shoulder pad and elbow pad.
Oh, yes. Okay.
45. Post-World War II, felt and leather shoulder pads were being replaced by plastic and fiberglass shoulder pads.
Yes.
Developed for football. And this kind of trend continues to start going on. And like when I was playing in the mid-90s, you had, I'm jumping ahead a couple decades here, but TPS made a shoulder pad that was literally football pads. And I'm like, how is this
I remember the ads for those, and I was just like,
how is this legal?
Yeah.
Luckily I was bigger than most of those guys, so I didn't get caught by any of them, but man, like seeing some of my teammates, I'm like, Jesus, yeah. Why do you wear them? Because they look heavy as hell.
Yeah.
B, yeah.
Hey, here's a fun fact. Mm. So Art Ross, like GM of the Bruins.
Sure.
Inventor extraordinaire, right? Mm-hmm. Like he invented the puck that they used for a while. He did some net designs and he did like.
I wish you said he invented the puck in general. I've been like, you're a liar, Art Ross. You're a damn liar.
No, but they used the Art Ross puck for like ages. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he actually came up with the with a prototype stick with the replaceable blade. Like his idea.
So like the aluminum shaft.
Yeah, yeah. His idea was basically like an aluminum or fiberglass
graphite,
type
yeah.
shaft with a replaceable blade. And he argued it would save money and all of these things. And he took it to the NHL, and the NHL was like, yeah, get out of here. There's no way we're doing this.
Oh, old man, get out of here.
So, yeah.
Then 50 years later.
Yeah, so he was really far ahead of his time on that one.
I had speaking of TPS, because it's funny, I was talking to a friend Shelby about this, because I was talking about the CCM being bought, and we were just going over gear. TPS made a rubber stick, too.
Rubber stick.
They had it was a rubber shaft. It was like a vulcanized rubber shaft over, I guess, like graphite or whatever. It had the feel of rubber, and it was like one of the best sticks I've ever had. And like, I don't use, you know me, I don't use any composite sticks or anything like that. Right. So it was like, that was kind of a weird feeling to me. That was like the only composite stick along with my Easton taper wall from the early 90s that I enjoyed. And now it's just straight wood, PIMP stuff here. But anyway,
the 40s,
yes,
and leading into the 50s are where you see a lot of, finally, where you get a lot of evolution of the gloves. This is where you start seeing the heavier padding and the rolls and the wrist, more of the wrist protection, and that's where this really starts to evolve. Is after World War II. So
well, now they have the materials to make it because they're not at war.
Yeah, basically.
No, I think that's that. There's part truth to that.
Yeah, and then you're going to see the catcher start to evolve into more of a baseball style.
First baseman's mitt.
Yeah, more of a first baseman's mitt rather than a catcher's mitt. Although for a while, you're still going to, like even into the 60s, you're still going to see guys wearing these crazy heavy mitts that look like something that Homer Simpson would use. Handling like, uranium. I mean.
It also looks like something you clean your yard with, you know? It's like, yeah. It was bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, there's just these big, heavy leather. I don't even know how to describe them aside from, like, catcher's mitt on steroids.
It's a yard work mitt, a heavy-duty yard work or, like, construction mitt almost, like a welder's mitt.
Mm-hmm. And this is where you see the blockers really starting to evolve into that firm, rectangular shape with the waffling and the rubber padding and as a one piece as opposed to a two piece. So that's where you're going to start seeing this as well. Still no masks until 1959.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody knows the Jacques Plante story.
Yeah.
So
51, the shoulder pads had to have a soft outer covering because they're like, hold on a minute, this plastic and stuff. No, we can't have this directly, guys.
No, because you're seeing a lot of broken jaws and broken ribs.
A lot
and
of broken faces.
Yeah.
Elbow pad developed by Lippmann's Tool Shop in Detroit added a sponge rubber layer over the outer of the hard plastic.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the first club to use, the Red Wings are the first club to use it. Eye injuries suffer from the butt end of hockey sticks. It became more prevalent in 1955.
Yep.
The Darty safety clip, a piece of rubber 2 inches in length, which is attached to the end of the hockey stick, was started. Gordie Howe was a keen supporter of this, saying he is one of the greatest developments in hockey history.
Yep.
57. Now, I don't know if you know this one or not. You probably do, because you're smart. The New York Rangers.
What about them?
First team to wear colored gloves.
Oh, yes.
1957. Red, white, and blue. Maple Leafs follow suit in 58-59. The Red Wings were the last team to switch over to colored gloves. 1967-68 is when they started that. The year of expansion.
Yeah. The reason for that was before then, it was too hard to dye the gloves and keep them because your hands would get sweaty and the gloves would absorb moisture during the game and it would leak.
Right.
Like it
there
would leave streaks. And
there wasn't much of a R&D when it came to gloves.
Right.
So.
It was a lot of trainers just kind of like, well, hey, let's try this and ta-da, you know.
1958, the league announced that the equipment must get approval from the NHL Rules Committee.
Yeah.
So. Finally, we're doing vetting in the late 50s. Congratulations, guys. You're really on top of the ball there. 59, sponge rubber covering on elbow pads must be at least half an inch in thickness.
Mm-hmm.
November 1959, Boom Boom Jeffrion suffered a serious injury collision with Doug Moens of the Bruins. Suffered a severed tendon in the back of his leg shortly after. The Ken Reardon approached CCM with a request, putting some sort of protection around the leg that protects players from flying skates. So you see
heel. Yep.
The big back heel now, where it's the Achilles protector almost.
Yeah, because before it used to look more like a boot, like a low boot, and then you see that tongue up the back mm-hmm. start to evolve. And then they're like high top skates.
Yeah, exactly. You know, all the sneakerheads all on that.
Yeah.
So we hit the 60s now.
Yes.
Any big evolutions there aside from you see a lot more goaltenders using masks?
Yep. You see a lot of goalies using masks. Not all of them.
No.
No. Glenn Hall.
The old guard guys, like your Turk Brodas. They're not going to use that crap. Terry Sawchuk towards the end did.
He did, yeah.
Towards the late, when he got expansion, even before expansion draft, he had.
Yeah. And that's partly because he had a nervous breakdown over his injuries.
That'll happen.
Yeah.
When you have like a sort of PTSD about it.
Basically, you know? He ended up with nervous exhaustion in the hospital. And then after that, that's when you see him really start to wear more protective gear. One thing I forgot to mention is goalies always had a protective, since the 20s, had like a protective girdle, like in their pants that they wore. So there's always been like a goalie girdle, not girdle, shell. What's the word I'm looking for?
I don't even know what the hell you're trying to say.
There's like almost like a
cup protector.
Sort of, but not
cod piece. Because the way you're motioning, it's cod piece.
Yeah, it's kind of a cod piece, but it was part of their pants. Like, it wasn't a separate.
Just probably just an extra protector kind of.
Yeah, thing. Like, they always had an extra protector, like pelvic area protector plate. So that's always been kind of a part of their equipment. Mm. I forgot to mention that.
Okay.
This is where you see. Shin pads are upgraded at this point.
Oh boy, were they. 61. Yeah. CCM again. 12-ply nylon. The same material used in shrapnel vests during the Korean War.
Yes.
Shin guards then were lightweight and didn't interfere with skating. So Ken Reardon really on top of things.
He really was. He was a smart guy.
Very smart. And, you know, I'm sure the Canadians had the elite players, so they mm-hmm. want the elite gear.
Mm-hmm.
So why would you not go ahead and start to wonder and read and develop things like that? Also in CCM, the Pro Light Skate with the Pro Guard. Now, of course, it's going to be CCM heavy as is the Reebok booklet that they handed out.
Sure.
Bauer, I'm sure, had some innovations as well.
Yeah.
So.
Because Bauer at the time was advertising better skate fits and, you know, like almost like the first kind of composite skates.
Mm-hmm.
So
your one piece kind of deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's that in the '60s again, not much. You get development of goaltenders. Obviously mm-hmm. the blocker becomes a big deal. Mm-hmm. The catcher becomes more evolved. A big thing underneath.
Yes.
You have the two piece chest protector.
Yes.
Where it's the catcher's thing. And then you have the arm pads as well.
Yes. And this is where you see goalie pads become less cricket like with those vertical rolls. And they become more pillow-like. The design evolves. The knee piece is higher. The rolls to the sides start to develop more. There's more protection extending to the toe.
Yeah, no, like a lot of the skates become a little bit more lower to the ground as well.
Yep.
So you get a more evolution of the goalie skate towards mm-hmm. then as well. 70s, this is when stuff gets weird.
Here's a thing about the 70s and goalie sticks is, well, first of all, you had the banana blade, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they tried to limit that.
Sure.
And this is where you start seeing a movement inching towards, like, composite sticks. Like, towards the end of the decade, you're going to see ads for things like goalie sticks made of Kevlar. Ray Bourque actually had the first two-piece, I guess technically composite stick, in that the way he would take a shot, his sticks would break too often. And so he asked if there was some way to, like, coat the stick with fiberglass or something like that. And they actually did it on the inside of the shaft of the stick.
Oh, the featherlight stuff.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No.
He was the first one to really.
He was the first big Sherwood guy.
Yeah. And so you see different stick changes like that coming into play. Was it Gretzky with the aluminum stick? That was what, the early
80s? You're getting to the mid-80s now.
Mid-80s, okay.
We still haven't gotten to helmets, because obviously one big thing, 73, you get your first visor. Greg Nell, 1973, put a visor, first player to wear a shield when he lost his left eye due to an opponent's high stick.
Hmm.
And I think Europeans more getting into the visor, because we talk about the evolution of goaltending, and of course they had the full fiberglass mask, but around that same time, the Europeans were starting to wear the helmet the helmet cage combo, much like you see Tretiak and the old stuff. Because I don't remember offhand, at least in the footage I've seen, of Tretiak wearing a fiberglass mask. It was always the helmet cage mm-hmm. combo.
Yep.
And that was, Christ, late 60s that he played, late 60s and throughout the 70s mm-hmm. into the 80s. Like, that's ahead of its time. Now, Archer Zerbe did wear the first goalie helmet ever made in Europe for prolonged his NHL career. That was the first. It rolled off the assembly line in 34 in Latvia. It was amazing.
And he's probably looking for a replacement as we speak.
Well, that's the funny thing is that, again, we're jumping ahead, but Osgood had a tough time.
Yeah.
Because he was trying to find the old Cooper helmets. And that's what shied Dan Clucci away, mm-hmm. is that he couldn't find replacement Cooper helmets, so he had to go to the full thing, and it looked weird as hell, and it was towards the end of his career anyway. So,
yeah.
Last goalie to wear that?
The full what?
The helmet cage combo.
Tim Thomas, 2013?
That was not a helmet cage combo. It was a mage.
Oh.
Because it had a fiberglass one piece.
Okay.
With a cage. That was a weird gimmick, too.
Yeah.
Ricky Deeps. When he broke his face on Brent Johnson's fist. He had to go because his cheekbone was all messed up.
Sure.
They had to use Chris Osgood's old helmet when he played for the Islanders on the thing.
I'd like to know why they still had that hanging around.
Why wouldn't you? That's a piece of just super memorable. Why wouldn't you have that around? I'd have that around hanging on this wall if I could find it. Are you kidding me? If I could find a game used like Mark Fitzpatrick, like with the lacrosse neck piece thing. That was Martin Perushek who had that little dangly catcher's neck.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what is that going to protect, stupid? You're never going to get a shot right into your trachea.
Yeah.
Idiot. Anyway. 79-80, of course, mandatory helmets then. But by that time... Yeah, grandfathered, but by that time, 70% of the league was starting to wear them.
Yeah.
So, there's that. 77% of the players by January 1st, 79 were wearing hockey helmets. And then, of course, the first fiberglass blade introduced in 76.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that. And then, yeah, we get into the 80s.
Yeah.
Cooperalls. We've been through Cooperalls. Look at our past episode. We did a whole thing on Cooperalls.
Well, this is where you really see a lot of competition, right? Because you have Titan and Christian and Bauer and CCM and Yofa. And
yeah, the Europeans are really, because with the WHA,
right,
getting all the European influence, your Yofas, your Cohos, your Graphs are coming into play. Mm-hmm. Like, you're also, your weird stuff. And like you said, the stick market was a boom.
Yeah.
I would say there was another renaissance in the mid-90s to late-90s with hockey stick manufacturers before it became just two companies. For all intents and purposes. So, I mean, that, you know, that 70s era was just a boom for everybody. Because mm-hmm. then, you know, you had Sherwood and Coho and Christian and Canadian and Titan, mm-hmm. and all these other things moving over. And not even including all the Russian stuff or the USSR stuff that was still over there.
Right. Like, you'll see some of the European goalies using a goalie stick as a Montreal stick. Mm-hmm. Those are actually a Finnish invention.
Yeah, no, a lot of Finnish goalies were. Like, that was Kippersol's big stick thing when
they
came over.
Yeah, no, it was a design stolen from... I'll have to look it up. But basically, it was a design that this Finnish guy stole from a Canadian that made its way to Russia.
Makes sense. 81 is when the aluminum stick shaft was approved.
Oh, I hate aluminum sticks.
And it wasn't until, I guess, when Gretzky went to the Kings in 88 that it became big.
Yeah.
Because he was using, I think, Yofas and Titans.
Oh, he had an endorsement deal with the...
With Titan. Yeah.
Yeah.
88, cuffs on gloves.
Mm-hmm.
That are as much as 2 inches shorter began being manufactured. So the short cuff gloves. So you didn't have the big ones that go all the way up the forearm.
Yeah, like all the way up to your elbow.
Yeah. You started having guys realize, you know what, I need to handle the puck better. Like, this is a possession. And, well, hell, Gretzky wore those. He wore the big Hespeller gloves in his thing, and that went up mid-forearm for him.
Oh, you said he wore those because he was getting slashed so much. So it made sense for him.
Exactly. He still had the hands.
Yeah.
But you see a lot of short cuff, like Gretzky during that 80s time. Easton, I remember he was a big endorser in that. And the cool thing about the Eastons, because Madonna was a big provider on this, is that it had an independent cuff on the glove.
Hmm.
So, like, on the inside of the glove, on the top of it, you had two Velcro straps.
Mm-hmm.
One was for the actual cuff itself. You can adjust it as you see fit, so that way you can have more wrist mobility. And the other one was at the very top of the glove, so you can adjust how loose the glove is or how tight the glove is. So you can have tight glove here, but the cuff very loose, so you have control of it that way. And I had a pair of those gloves, and those were fantastic.
Whereas you look at the old school gloves, and they had, like, laces.
Oh, yeah. They're almost like gauntlets.
Yeah.
So there's that. In the 90s, you see the goaltending finally starting to get, like, the pads are starting to get a little lighter. You started to get arrow flex pads.
Yep.
Darren Poopa was a big thing. It almost seemed like every right-handed catch goalie had arrow flex pads because it was Poopa, it was Barrasso, it was like Stefan Beauregard. Like all these guys who were backwards goaltenders like wore these arrow flex pads, and they started to get, you know, of course, the fiberglass mask, which we totally leave out.
Yeah.
When Dave Dryden.
What, 78?
Yeah. Yeah, so he figured out a prototype in terms of just having the fiberglass mask with a cage in front of it, so with better vision, lighter helmet, mm-hmm. and not as restricting your mm-hmm. view, and it's not right up to your face either.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was a huge boon for him, and the blockers start the thing, and the catching glove kind of gets away from that first baseman mitt into its own accord.
And now you have actual blockers.
Yeah.
None of this wood frame nonsense anymore.
Nope, it's just a pad in the middle, and you put it in there, and away you go.
Mm-hmm.
Like different developments, like the Curtis curve
from
Christian, which was weird. Like just seeing that in the store, in the pro shop, it's like, wow, this is kind of how the goalies do it. Like, it's like,
it's
like,
a little wavy. I'm like, am I looking at it and I'm just like,
I totally never understood the reasoning for it either.
Mm.
But then you see 94 composite sticks being a big thing, too. Like, mm-hmm. they started to come into effect and in vogue. Aluminum sticks, and like I said, like, TPS put out a rubber stick, so different kind of mm-hmm. composites were made onto it. One-piece sticks towards the early 2000s, I think, started, too. I'm trying to think of when I first saw the Synergy ad, and I want to say it was 99... No, probably 2002. 2001, 2002, around that area. They did the one-piece stick, and I still haven't been able to deal with it. And people who can use it, God bless them, but I try, and I never do.
And then in the 90s, you see the first league-wide endorsements.
Oh, yeah, no, the
because
90s especially.
Remember, you see players with, like, Yofa blacked out. Not Yofa, but...
No, they did. Like, a lot of guys did have a lot of the manufacturers blacked out.
Yeah.
It depends. And that was also a league thing, too.
Right.
Like, I mean, you look at WIHF when they do the World Championships, like Vaughn... doesn't mm-hmm. have a sponsorship thing, so all the goalies have to cover up their Vaughn pad.
Right.
And this is also a time where a company like Vaughn, who was so embedded in goalie equipment, was like, let's try player equipment. And they had Vaughn gloves and Vaughn, like, they had a full line, sans helmet and sticks and skates. And, like, that didn't go over well. They're like, all right, let's stick to goaltending equipment. There's a couple guys who wore Vaughn, but it was like, yeah, whatever. But, you know, as you get to the 90s, the speed starts to get better. You get, you know... Eric Lindros with the Bauer Cooper mm-hmm. endorsements. I mean, you see a lot of guys for CCM. Mm-hmm. Sergei Fedorov for Nike. Mm-hmm. Matt Sundin, the Nike goalies advertisements.
Those were great. I love those.
Fantastic.
The ESPN hockey ads were pretty good.
Yeah.
Back when they remembered what hockey was.
Exactly. But like, yeah, you started to see guys getting faster and bigger too. And that was mm-hmm. a big thing, is a lot of guys were getting bigger and the pads were getting bigger too.
The equipment was getting kind of oversized.
Yeah. A little bulky, not just goaltending, but look at, what was it? Craig Ludwig's shin pads.
Well,
that were
those
just
were
like
his shin
pads
that he had since his UND days.
The freaking wide ones.
Yeah.
Really?
Those were literally the same pads he had at UND.
He played in the league for 47 years. How did no one catch that?
And he said he just kept like welding pieces back into place. Or,
Jesus Christ. He's the Archie Irby of this damn thing.
I guess so. And he said he has them hanging like in his basement over his like basement.
Of course he does. It keeps the air duct out. Like,
man cave bar. Like, he said the Hall of Fame wanted them and he wouldn't give them up.
No, smart, because they could do investigations on him.
Well, and the 90s are when starting in the 60s, you do see league officials come in and check your goalie pads or whatever, but they don't do it every game. They don't do it. They do sort of surprise checks, but they weren't really surprise checks, you know?
You knew they were coming.
Yeah. So, like, Tony Esposito was known. I mean, he was pretty famous for cheating with his gear. And if you look at it, I mean, you look at photos of it, it's kind of obvious. There's stuff in there that shouldn't be. So when he knew they were coming, he would just sort of disassemble pieces of his equipment, and then they would measure it and be like, all right, you're good to go. And he'd just put it back together into his normal style. And like, he sewed a piece of webbing in his five hole.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, nobody ever really called him on it. No, nobody from the league ever went, hey, can't do that.
They did that to Pete Peters with his oversized jersey.
Yeah.
When he was with the Bruins.
Yeah.
Also, you see a lot of guys, even in towards the end of their days, like Shanahan had those freaking raggedy shoulder pads.
Well, he said that those were his shoulder pads he's been wearing since juniors. Oh, yeah. And I'm like, how? How are those things still held together?
Well, it's funny because I talked to, like back in the day when I was a little equipment boy,
mm-hmm.
I worked for the Chesapeake Icebreakers, and I was talking to Caleb Toth, who's an indoor lacrosse Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the raggedy pads too. And one day I went out, like, it was clean out day, and I talked to him, like, well, why do you do with those pads? He's like, you know, I tried the bigger pads because I thought more protection, mm-hmm. and I hadn't separated my shoulder more times because there was too much space. He said there was too much space between the actual shoulder and the pad itself that when the pad impacted, it actually hurt his shoulder more.
Sure.
So he figured he tried stuff out with it closer to a thing, and he said he's never played better. He's got more range of motion. He was able to absorb it a lot better than he would. Mm-hmm. With the bigger pads. I'm like, that's an interesting way to look at it. And like I was watching something Sportsnet did about the equipment and stuff. Like, it's like, yeah, the Elise equipment guy had a story about Mike Gartner.
Oh yeah.
About his shin pads. Saying that, you know, Gartner shin pads, he'd worn them forever, and they tried to put a new thing of shin pads in there, and he said, "What the fuck is this?"
He's like, "Get out of here.
Get out of here with this stuff. I don't need this new gear." So, yeah, I mean, then there's that. And, of course, your jerseys start to evolve, too. Like, we didn't even talk about the jersey evolution.
No, that's a whole other show.
That's a completely other show that we'll have to do. We might have to do a video on that one because that's more of a visual show than anything else. Maybe when we get the new studio going.
Yeah.
We'll do it that way.
Yep.
And then that way we can do the show and do a visual show and maybe show off our jerseys, too. It'd be great. Because I think, because I have a couple Edge jerseys. I have... I think I have 3 or 4 authentic Edge jerseys that I bought for May Gray for $50.
Wow.
Including my Buffalo Slug one.
Is my new one an
what
Edge?
New one?
The Kings jersey?
It's an authentic Edge. Oh,
okay.
It's a replica.
Okay.
So it's not the real edgy goodness.
Gotcha.
Because it's got still got the tags on it, on that bot. It's got that fan tag on the bottom there.
Yeah.
Mine's got a fight strap on the back, so you know it's authentic. But, man, May Gray is the place to go because I've gotten a lot of jerseys there for super cheap. And they're, like, authentic. And I'm just like, oh, so cool. And it's always my size, too, because it's the fat guy wear. So I'm just like, all right. I like big, bulky jerseys anyway. It works perfect. So,
yeah.
So, and then, yeah, we'll do jerseys another time. But I'm trying to think. Do we have anything we missed out on? Well, I guess we stopped the 90s and stuff getting bigger.
Yeah.
And then it kind of switched to a smaller, lighter situation that we see today.
And the random innovations like the heat blade.
That's another show, too. Holy garbage. Like, I remember when that came out, and Sean O, the creator of Face Off Hockey Show, said, like, that was one of the few times he was on air because he was like, coaching baseball. He's like, how the hell does he think you're going to heat the blade and the ice is still going to stay there? Like, it doesn't make sense. And he's like, there's a battery back there. How is that not going to blow up and your foot's going to be on fire after that?
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just like, yeah, no. Wayne Gretzky endorsed this. Why? I guess he needed the money because the Coyotes ripped him off on his investments. So he's getting money anywhere.
I found a random ad for Gretzky advertising, like, endorsing watches.
Was it a Swatch watch?
No, it was in an old GQ magazine.
Of course it was.
Yeah.
He would be in Gentleman's Quarterly.
The same magazine I found the Goldberg perfume.
Ah, of course. I was surprised I saw that Pitbull perfume in the clearance rack at Walmart. Mr. Worldwide, indeed. But yeah, a lot of things related. Like, I picked up your skates, and, like, the bulk of your skates...
Mm-hmm.
Super, the new skates that I had compared to the skates that I'm replacing them with,
mm-hmm.
my God, like night and day. Because the skates that I'm replacing them with are from 99, I think, with the Bauer 7000s, the top of the line. I didn't start wearing those until 2002 because it was hard to break in, and I like my Vapors.
Mm-hmm.
But just, I love my old 7000s, but like just wearing, like how bulky it is. And like, I've only worn them once on the ice because we've only had time to go out once because your injuries and my injuries and stuff like that. But man, it feels weird not to have that bulk there. And it's unsettling a little bit.
Yeah.
But I can see why people, like the younger kids who grew up on that, deal with that a little better. Because they all know light stuff. Because
that's all they know.
It's all they know.
Yeah.
Like I pick up, when we go to like Jarrell's or Shields or something, we're just dicking around in the hockey area and just like picking up a stick. I'm like, I need weight to a stick. And I need that feeling of I'm actually the power actually being transferred. Because every time I use a slap shot, I've done a try to take a slap shot with a composite tick, it felt like I was going to break it. And then that way I'm so tentative, and I don't squeeze hard enough or whatever, and just boom. Like I can pass like a sumbitch on that, but
those tacky grip sticks bother me so much.
And that's why I only like when I tape up my stick, I only put the little end at the top because I don't like the tacky feel in the handle area.
Mm-hmm.
So to have that whole... Ugh.
Well, here's a fun fact. You know, it wasn't until Billy Smith came along that goalies had to tape the butt end of their sticks. Yeah.
I can remember that. I think there's a hubbub about Braden Holtby recently about having his red tape.
The wrong tape. Yeah. No, because of Billy's ways with his stick... in defending his territory. The league said, enough of this. We don't need another ruptured spleen.
Sure.
So you gotta tape up the butt end of your stick. You gotta cap it somehow.
Give him some notice.
Yeah. And
I would love to talk to our namesake of the show someday why he didn't tape his blade.
He's on Twitter. I'm sure.
I know he
is. Nicely.
Like why he didn't tape his blade and why he stays so far back in his net and with his butt hitting the goalpost all the goddamn time. Like every picture. Like I did a mock-up logo that you haven't scanned through yet.
Yeah. That's basically it.
That is basically a microphone with the butt end up against the thing and the mask holding on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like Jesus. Like well, I would love to talk to him about that. We got to figure out the whole Skype Google Hangouts thing soon enough. I'm sure once we get settled
I just
want
to talk to like all the various like goalie alumni and just be like, can I ask you about this?
How did you do this? when we decide to take a weekend for ourselves up in Winnipeg, we should see if Joe has time to record something too.
Because
he saw that the evolution a little bit in the 60s and 70s and stuff. So, and to talk to him about the WHA days and stuff, and just how cutthroat things were.
And he's so fun.
Yeah, Joe's great. And Joe, you give him a topic, he goes.
Yeah, he just goes.
It's like talking to like Tracy Morgan or something. You give him a topic, you just sit back and let the comedy roll in. So talking to him would be great. It's just a matter of us getting up there.
Yeah.
So
we should get Verge on the show too.
To have Verge and Slosh in there just to have an evolution. Because I think one passed the torch to the other, right? Like,
yeah.
Verge gave his way for Brad to get in here.
Yeah, which is a great choice.
No, it's like you go from prime rib to prime ribs. Like, oh, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
And Verge still does stuff for collegehockey.net or whatever it is. It's college hockey news or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't gotten that.
I want to have him explain to me how he does his notes because it's fascinating.
Yeah, the notes would be the shorthand stuff. It's great. Yeah. It's like talking to a court stenographer how they're able to type stuff up so quick. It's like, oh, how are you doing this?
Because he has like a single page and he can tell you exactly who got what penalty and who assisted on what goal and what time that goal was and like it's just like this page of like squares and numbers and that's it. And I'm just like.
And his memory of the past players are so sharp too. Like, it's like, God damn, I can't remember half the kids. Much less you comparing, Christ, what the kid's name is what? From Roseau. There's a program right over there. Christ on a crutch. Yeah. This is the good thing about how we keep our programs together. Hey, look, it's Chris Wilkie. He's no longer with the team. He transferred to Colorado College.
To be with his brother.
Good for him.
Well, he saw what Tucker and Colton...
he saw they left. And like, I don't want to be here anymore. He wasn't getting a chance anyway, either. Where the hell are the forwards? He showed me the defenseman. Oh, here we go. Zach Yon. Like, comparing Zach Yon to guys from the past, like a Parise, or comparing Trevor Olsen to like a Taves kind of player, stuff like the comparisons of players from years. I'm like, Jesus, how do you
Tyson chose to like Mike Green?
Yeah,
or Matt Green.
Matt Green,
sorry.
Matt Green, no, that wouldn't be Tyson Jost. He was a forward. Matt Green was a defenseman.
No, but in the terms of finishing his chest.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But yeah, just to have that, it's wild.
Yeah. We could have him on and ask him, like, what, you know, answer the burning questions, like, what was Eddie Belfour like in college?
Sure, like, what, like, the past, the past guys, and why, I would love to do a thing about why how big, because I read Slosh had a thing today about how UND's trying to do those premier events.
Oh, yeah, more of them?
Yeah, like yeah. Once every, I'm like, why, like, how did North Dakota become, how did North Dakota trump Boston, Boston University, Michigan, Ohio State to be the royalty that it is? Is it because they're so good, or is it because the location is, it's a situation where it's the only big sport, so it's supported so much, it's under the limelight so much, because it's the only, it's literally the only game in town.
I think that's part of it, and I think a big part of it, too, goes all the way back to Fido Perper. Mm-hmm. You know, because he was born here, he went to school here, he went off to the NHL, and then he came back here and coached. So I think that's, like, a big key mm-hmm. foundational point for it.
Sure.
So, because if you look at the coaching history, they haven't had too much turnover in coaches. They've had a relative amount of success. They've had...
Wow, they've been in the tournament 15 straight years.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just this...
Of course, if you play good enough, you're going to get in the freaking tournament, especially knowing that, especially in a, where at Fargo, yeah. you don't think that NCAA was holding their breath, because those tickets are already goddamn sold. Yeah. And we saw that Saturday. Oh, was there no one there Saturday? Holy Jesus.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's wrap up. I got a NASCAR race to watch. It's a Brickyard, baby. Woo! Where can people find you in your impending lawsuit?
NHL History Girl.
You can find me at Scotty Waz. You can find the show at SDR Strom Bubble. If you have any questions, comments, complaints, concern, also the SatterstromBubble@gmail.com is the email where you can email us things and stuff. I haven't checked that since I started it up. So, oopsie doodle. That's it. That's all. We will talk to you in 2 weeks when, who the hell knows what the hell we're going to talk about. I really don't know. We'll figure out in these 2 weeks and we'll let you know. And also, thanks to you for actually retweeting some of your stuff that you do on your main page to get some views that way.
So. I tried to remember when my coworker isn't yammering in my ear.
It's hard to sometimes, I'm sure. All right, guys. Thank you for listening. This has been the Cyberstream Bubble for Jen. I'm Scott. Take care of yourself and someone else. Just play with the mic while I'm doing the outro. That's fine. Sorry, here, you know what? I can just do that. Take care of yourself and someone else. This has been the Cyberstream Bubble in the Face of Hockey Show Media Faction. See you guys in 2 weeks. Bye.